Described in this verse of meditation on Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the mother that sprinkles the nectar by which one becomes immortal. But this nectar is of the nature of the non-dual or the unified awareness, Advaita, non-dual awareness, that is the source of immortality. How do we become immortal? By giving up identification with body and mind. That is the limitedness, the diversity is all there. When we give up the attachment to these, now all the differentiation, all I and the world, that division in our awareness goes away. And now there is the concept of death also goes away with it. That is real, true immortality. And Bhagavad Gita grants us that immortality by removing our identification with the body and mind, whatever is changing. Whatever is changing, when I identify with that, I also change with that. And thus, when death is a process, you know, that it changes and comes to a point when we call it death. So, if we identify ourselves with body and mind, there is no escape from death. And once we disidentify ourselves from all these things that change, the word death has no meaning for us. Then it is not like becoming immortal means living for a long time. That is not really the concept of immortality. That is not true immortality at all. That is just a long life which can be a blessing or a curse, who knows. It is but it is just elongation of this very kind of living, that you take some kind of a liquid or some other substance by which your aging process gets slowed down, and thus you live for a long time. But that is again, body means changes, and thus there is going to be a disintegration sometime or the other. So this idea of immortality that Bhagavad Gita is telling us is not of this type. It is true immortality, this identification with whatever is changing. And what happens with that? You don't change. That you don't change and thus you are truly immortal. And to that end, Bhagavad Gita is telling many ways. In studying this sixth chapter, we specially are seeing the meditative processes that one should take up. The meditation is mainly a mental process. There is, of course, as we saw, a physical component to it, about taking proper diets. Everything has to be proper, you know, whatever is needed. Accordingly, we should do everything like sleeping, working, relaxing, eating. All these are to be done in a balanced manner. Nothing should be overdone, like fasting. It is good to fast from time to time for bringing equanimity and balance in personality. But to torture the body, one should never take up fasting. Bhagavad Gita is against that. It is, if you fast too much, then that is not right. And again, if you eat too much, that is not right. If you sleep too much, it is not right. If you sleep too little, that again is not right. If you work too much, that is not right. If you work too little, again that is not right. If you have too much of relaxation and that sports and games and all that, it is not right. If you have too little relaxation, that again is not right. A quantum is not given by Bhagavad Gita. It is according to one's constitution. How much one requires depends on many factors. And so, it cannot be told in a blanket way that eat only food with so many calories. It depends. Or eat only vegetarian food. No, nothing like that. Bhagavad Gita has not prescribed that. It is whatever food is suitable to you according to the place that you live with. Your genetic constitution also has to do a lot with it. And so therefore one food need not be the food for everyone. The emphasis which I really appreciate here in Bhagavad Gita and in Upanishads, that they speak of the principles and they are very well aware that these principles, they take different shapes according to the different temperaments, different mentalities, different upbringings and so forth. It is not that one rule for everyone, no. It is according to what is needed for you, what is available to you, and so forth. So, this is a very important factor here, that one should observe that what makes my mind calm down, let me take that food, and so forth. So, last time we were seeing that this is, this mental process is the heart of meditation. Most important. It is not just sitting. Sitting is a preparation. Sit properly. Sit with your head, neck and backbone in one straight line. All these are very good things. But these are to be remembered as preparatory. It is not really the actual this meditation. It is like, you know, putting on a particular dress or a gear for going for sports. Like if you are going to play football, then you need that all that gear to be put on, you know. But if you just put it on and just stand there on the field, then you don't play. That is not football, you see. The heart of the game is, well, you have to play the sport. It is the outer gear is only for convenience. So, similarly, sitting postures and other things are important, but that is not the real meditation. Meditation is a mental process, and that is, we saw, it is described in these verses 24th and 25th, and the description will continue further, that sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva sarvana sheshatah manase vendriya gramam viniyamya samantatah shanai shanai uparamet buddhya dhriti grihitaya atma sanstham vana kritva na kinchidapi chintayet. Having completely renounced all desires born of fancy, controlling well the senses from all sides by the mind alone, yoga should be practiced. One should withdraw by degrees, establishing the mind in the self by the intellect regulated by concentration, and should not think of anything else. This is showing the technique that our sense organs, they will naturally, because of their tendencies, will go in various directions. When one sits for meditation and tries to concentrate on God or on our true self, what happens? That the mind starts running to various objects. One can see that. It is running anyway. When you sit for meditation, you start seeing it. Not that because of meditation it has started running. It is a very wrong idea sometimes people get and ask questions that when I am not meditating, you know, I don't get all those thoughts. But sit for meditation and so many thoughts start crowding in the mind. Meditation did not generate those thoughts. Meditation only allowed you to see those thoughts, that's all. So, that is the first step in controlling, in fact, that you are able to see them now. So, when these things come, then you see that desires are behind them. And these desires, they come from what? That fancy, imagination, sankalpa, that you think of something and you feel a kind of sweet sensation about it. How nice it will be. Suppose I go to Switzerland and then sit there and seeing all those Alps mountains. The mind starts, you know, making all those things there. And then you get slowly attached to those things. Then the desires become strong. That yes, I must go and do it. So, it is... now what this person should do? He must determine that I have to give them up all. And how one has to do it? First thing is that use the mind. The mind has these two aspects. One is that it opens up the different possibilities. The other aspect is it decides, which is called buddhi or viveka, the capacity to discriminate between what is right and what is not right. So, Shankaracharya mentions here that one should use that faculty of mind, which tells us what is right and what is not right, and using that, one should control the senses going to all these different objects. That indriya gramam means all the different sense organs that we have. They will try to go. The eyes will try to go to a pleasant form. That form which brings some pleasant sensation, eyes will naturally go for that. But now, you use the discriminating faculty. Vivekataha Shankaracharya says there that you pull it back. As it is trying to go there, you pull it back. Don't let it go. This is to be practiced. This is not a matter just for listening or giving lectures about. It is a matter that we all need to practice. And as we had discussed this earlier, that it has to be a long practice. That next verse says that shanai shanai, gradually, don't force. You know, this is a very important psychology here that is being taught. That don't keep on just bashing your mind, or do not go on just scolding it or whipping it. It is all right sometimes to do that, but the most important thing is that train it. You know? The training of the mind is what is needed, and one should be very patient with it. I like those, you know, those animal trainers. They train so many different animals, and one has to be very patient with them. You cannot train, say, especially they say it is most difficult to train a cat. Dogs can be trained because they have that genetically they are obedient, you know. So they get trained. But to train a cat is very difficult. It takes lot of patience. I have seen some cats being trained. I was surprised the kind of training that they have put into that otherwise very independent species, you see. They train elephants to play piano, you know. So, of course, not this kind of piano, it will break immediately. But they have trained that, and how does it happen? You know, shanai shanai. Gradually, one should not be violent with it. Controlling mind is what is told. Not killing the mind. If you, in the name of controlling the mind, if you kill the mind, then you have just destroyed the most important instrument that you had. Controlling, one person was told that I am giving you a horse that is just will, is very good horse. Will not throw you off the back at all. Very well behaved. And so sold his horse to that man. Now when the horse was brought, this fellow saw that the horse doesn't run at all. And he complained to the seller that you said that it is a very good, well behaved horse. Yes, it is well behaved. It will never throw you off the back. Because it doesn't run, then what is the use of that horse? So if the mind is not doing its function, it is not of use. One should therefore take all the precaution to keep the mind active, really virulent, strong. And then that mind, bringing that kind of mind under control, is meaningful. If you kill it and then you say it is under control, what is the use of bringing it under control? Just you have killed it. It is, they tell of a story that one man was considered very wise in the village. And people used to come to him for advice. But he was a very impractical person, very just wise means he knew many things. Except how to understand the meaning of what people are asking. So, one cow was trying to drink some water in that round earthen pot. So, and while trying to do that, got her head stuck in it. Now somebody then brought this wise man here, that how to take, and the question put to him was, how to take out the head of this cow from this jar? Then he said, okay, I will do it. You want the head of the cow out of the jar, is it not? First bring me a sword. Then they brought the sword to him. In one blow he cut the head of the cow. And then said that, okay, now bring me a big hammer. Then with the hammer he broke the earthen pot and said, this is the head of the cow out of the pot, out of this earthen pot. They said, well, what is the use of the cow? Is dead now. We wanted just to, why did you not just break the pot? That would have been good enough. That is what we wanted. You told that you wanted the head out, so I thought that first let me separate the cow and the head, and then get the head out. So it is like that. Then now what is the use of that wisdom? So it is very important, therefore, that we do not kill the mind. One has to apply the pressure in such a way that while it gets strained, it does not break, it does not just get destroyed. It is a very skillful job. Those trainers in schools, the teachers and all, they know, very good teachers, they know how to train the mind. It is the teaching some arithmetic and all those things, that all comes first by training the mind, getting the attention of the students. Their mind is to be glued to that subject and then it grasps it. Otherwise the teacher goes on just telling something from the book and the students sit there with just the like the glass statues, nothing happens there, no change takes place, and the teacher feels, well, I have taught, my job is done. The students feel that they have attended the class. It is, one teacher was telling me recently what I am frustrated. The students are just sitting with that kind of glass faces. And no, nothing happens, you see. And I don't feel, therefore, like teaching at all. They sit there and then they want credit after that for taking the class. The school systems have all those things. Just for sitting also you get credit. Not that you have to actually pass the test. Some credit you get only for attending. So, it is because they don't feel that interest, they don't connect themselves to that. So, one has to connect to one's mind. And then, using that mind, tell the mind, control. Now look, your sense of vision is going to that object. Now slowly bring it back. Again, don't destroy it. Don't destroy any of your instruments. Only train them, our personality. That is really another aspect of yoga, or another name, another definition for yoga. The training the personality, physical as well as mental, so that it can realize the goal. It can take us to the ultimate destination. So, therefore, it is said here that the words are really beautiful words. This subject is so difficult. And sometimes the genius of Lord, it is only God who can really give message in such powerful and only such very few words, that Gradually, shanai shanai, be particular that you do not exert pressure to a breaking point. Otherwise, you may destroy it. It is again different for different persons. The breaking point is not same for everyone. I am given that you run 25 miles, then for that will be the breaking point will come maybe with half mile itself. That is the breaking point. But then there are those marathon runners, they will say, okay, first let me practice once 25 miles and then I will be ready for another 25 miles. That is the for them it makes no difference. They can run that much. So therefore, according to one's capacity, everybody has the potential to realize this self. Each and every one of us, because we are that. But that doesn't mean that everyone is equally constitutionally ready for that at this moment. One has to go through the training according to one's personality. Whatever is applicable to A is not necessarily applicable to B too. So it is the pressures that one has to apply, therefore differ. If one applies too much pressure, it is like the pressure cookers, you know. They have a particular purpose, say cook rice or cook some lentils like that, vegetables. So for that they require certain amount of pressure, not more. It is so they are geared for handling that kind of pressure. But then there are big boilers which have to handle much more pressure. So they are built in a different way. So if you try to put that kind of pressure in this small pressure cooker, well, it will burst. There is therefore a valve. You know, if the pressure goes a little more than what is the optimum, that valve opens and then the extra steam or it goes out. The same with many everything, you know, regular small car tires, they have a particular pressure rating, that how much air you should pump into it. For a heavy truck, that is again the tires are made differently, it requires different pressure. So therefore, it is not imitation in spiritual life. What is good for one is not necessarily good for other. But the purpose is to be kept in mind. The training has to go on. One has to apply all resources available for this training. So, buddhya dhriti grihitaya, beautiful words, by using one's intellect, one has to make good use of it, that we have been given intellect. Swami Ranganathanandaji, who was our president and was a great teacher of Vedanta worldwide, and his books on Bhagavad Gita, that universal message of Bhagavad Gita in three volumes, which I normally refer for my preparing my classes. So there once he told, somebody was asking questions, and that how should I do that? His response, and I saw that response, him giving that response, that he would point to his head, use this. God has given you this. put it to use. It is because although we have been given the instrument, we don't put it to use. Keep it dormant. Intellectual lethargy is very common with us. That it is we use our or misuse our intellect to undermine our own progress. So therefore, it is important that we use our intellect to see what is right, what is not right. Put it for use continuously. The more you use it, the sharper and more efficient it becomes. And it tells, well, this is not right, this is not right, this is right, this is right. And follow then that. Even when you make a mistake by following it, that is again a training, that you learn from that mistake. If you are observing it, then what happens? That it made a mistake, it thought that it is right, went there, and found that it is not right, then it comes back and remembers this, that it was a mistake to do it. So next time you will remember that it is at such a point, I took a wrong turn here. So next time you will avoid it. So that is how the intellect should be used. And the next word, dhriti grihitaya, it one has to be very patient. It is not that it will happen very quickly. Takes long time. Perseverance is required. Patience is required. Then gradually you will see result. It is a long, long training process, friends. It is very unscientific, very foolish that we expect results in this matter very quickly. For a simple high school education, we are ready to spend about 15 years from the childhood. You start training the child in what is that, in that preschool and this and that, till that 12th grade. And for that ordinary education, one can spend so much, 15 years. It is all right. But this ultimate spiritual wisdom, I have to get it in 1 hour. Isn't it foolish? It is, you have to keep on working at it for a long, long time. Steadily, very steadily, in a disciplined, steady manner. If you do not have that discipline, then naturally it will take much longer a time. Anyway, it takes long. But if we are not disciplined, then, well, it will take much longer. It is, therefore, one has to have that sense of perseverance, determination, and lot of patience. With that dogged determination, one should proceed, you know. It is, one should always find how one can improve oneself. It is, in that sense, you should keep on training. That is what Lord is telling here. Atma samstham manakritva. That your keep the mind always glued to the goal. Always think that your goal is self-realization. Knowing my true self. Experiencing my true self. You can call it experiencing God. Whatever. But it is, the mind is to be kept connected to this goal, that I want to do this in life. Whatever else I am doing, let that fall in place in accordance with this main objective or goal of life. And na kinchidapi chintayet. Do not keep on thinking uselessly. This again comes, the practice is required for that. It is our thinking process. It is, we want to say, think about God. But if so many other thoughts are continuously running riot in our mind, then how much mind is left, you know, to put it on God? Some time back, it has happened a few times, my computer started running very, very slow. Very slow. And the speed started getting reduced. And I was worried why it is happening. So one of our techie friends, he comes to help us. So he said that, look, what is happening. So many programs are running in the background. I am not aware of that, you know. They are not being shown on the screen. They are not seen. They are all running in the background. All useless things. They enter there through various these holes that are there. Those programs, they enter. And then they occupy lot of the computer speed, the memory and so forth. And thus what happened? I was not getting any speed for what I wanted to do on the machine. It is, for example, for typing a simple thing, you know, a one word. If I press that A, after pressing immediately that word will not, that letter will not appear. It took about half a minute for one letter to appear on that screen. Why? Because so many other things were going on. So, he eliminated all those and then the speed was normal. It got good speed. So, therefore, in our mind also, we can see this. So many unwanted programs are running all the time. We have to eliminate those, you know. Then only we can get good speed for the pursuit of our life's goal. Otherwise, that will keep on hampering the speed. So, therefore, those programs are to be eliminated. All those unnecessary thought processes will have to be eliminated. That, I am doing this job in this company, if I do it nicely, then I will get a raise, then I will get a promotion, then I will slowly become president of the company. And what happens by that? Well, the work that you are doing, that suffers because the mind is running completely on a different line now. You have not that unnecessary thought that has occupied a lot of space in the mind. We see those some of the great people like example of Swami Vivekananda is really amazing and very instructive that how he could do many, many things in a very short time, like reading big books. He would take very, very little and that reading would be thorough again. He won't forget what he had read and studied, understanding everything very well. The whole Encyclopedia Britannica volumes, he used to read just by as if he is just turning the pages. But why he had that tremendous speed? All other programs are not running at that time. So he could study that so quickly. He had explained that when one of his disciples said, "Wow, this is a miracle." He said, "This is not miracle. Anybody can do it. Everybody can do it." We may say that, "Oh, I also want to do it. I have so many books to read, a big library with me. I buy the books, but don't get much time to read them. It will be so nice if I can get the speed like that. How to get it? Yes. How to get it? Stop all other thoughts, and then you will absorb them. Your speed will increase a lot. Your absorption will be better. So that is how. Again, I will give the example of Swami Ranganathananji. He would read very fast in any aeroplane travel. He would take a book and finished. When I was in our probationer's training center, we had a library that he donated, his personal library. About thousands of books were there. And very nice books, carefully chosen, great books were there. And I thought that he must have got all these books, and then he doesn't have room to keep them and doesn't want to read them all, so he must have now transferred it to our training center where we can use them. But that is not the case. He had read each of them. We could see, pick up any book from his library, his markings and all those certain things that he had comments, they also were written in the parenthesis. Very nicely he had studied them, and he would quote from those books just offhand. It is why this was possible, because of this capability. And that each of us can develop that, provided we put in that practice in a methodical way. And gradually we see these things happening in one's life. Then this process, next verse says that it is, the content is already more or less explained. Yato yato nischarati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyamyaitad atmanyeva vasham nayet. Wheresoever the restless and unsteady mind wanders, from that very object it should be restrained and brought under the control of the self alone. Mind has been told here in the other faculty of the mind, that keeps on wandering. One faculty is that of discrimination, that what is right and what is not right. The other is, it keeps on wandering in all directions. So, now what is to be done? It will go by its very long accumulated tendencies, it will go to different objects. But a spiritual aspirant should observe that. Oh, it is going there. And then control it. Pull it from there. From that very object, it should be pulled back. Wherever it is trying to go because of this sense enjoyments, the attractions and repulsions of the world, when it tries to go, pull it back. So this is an exercise that one has to keep on doing. This is a mental practice that the mind, it is not to be condemned, that a person like all of us, we are spiritual aspirants. Being spiritual aspirant naturally means that we are not perfect. We are trying to become perfect. And so we have certain faults, certain problems. We have some other drags in life. there is a spiritual drag, that is why we are spiritual aspirants. But there are other drags too, and therefore we are now just aspirants, not the one who have realized the goal. We are still on the path. So all of us therefore have these different tendencies. I told you one nice incident in my life that I was one of our senior monks. I was a very junior Swami at that time, and he just asked me, how are you doing? Are you progressing in your spiritual disciplines? Okay. And I said, oh Maharaj, oh Swamiji, it is so difficult. I am sometimes so frustrated that there are so many unnecessary thoughts, so many wrong things that keep on coming in the mind. What to do? It is, I feel frustrated. He laughed and said that, well, if suppose you do not have any undesirable thought, if your mind is fully in God, you do not see anything but God, then that is what you feel, is it not, that you should be? If you become like that, then instead of the picture of Sri Ramakrishna, we would put your picture there. It is the idea is that we all have to struggle through where whatever position that we are in. Our imperfections need not be highlighted. The very fact that we are human beings and are struggling to reach the spiritual goal, it already includes this, that we do not have the ideal fully manifest in our life. We are trying to do that. Therefore, nobody should be condemned. Everybody has problems. You will see this special feature in Bhagavad Gita, that nobody is condemned. It is everybody, yes, you can start from where you are. It is possible in your own way. Everybody has hope. Everybody has to go according to one's tendencies. It is, but one should progress. I have many bad tendencies doesn't mean that I should have them. It does not also mean that I will have them. There is a very beautiful incident in the life of Swami Sivananda, a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, and a great soul who used to be, especially in his later life, always merged with in the divine awareness. So one of his disciples was asking him that why all these thoughts come in the mind. He said, oh, continue with the practice, continue with the spiritual practice. A time will come in your life when you will say that, well, how can such thoughts ever come? They will not come at all. That coming of those things will become an impossibility for you. So therefore, keep on going with determination, with a lot of patience and perseverance. One must keep on going. It is therefore this control is important. And what happens with that? The result can be seen, you know. Right. As we practice, so the result will be seen too. The result is that the mind starts becoming calm down. like a turbulent horse being trained. What happens? The turbulence starts going down. So the mind, that turbulence will start going down, more and more peace will be felt. That is what is told in the next verse. Prashanta manasam yenam yoginam sukhamuttamam upaiti shantarajasam brahma bhutamakarmasham. To this yogin whose activity, rajas, has subsided, who is of a tranquil mind, sinless and identified with Brahman, comes supreme bliss. That the translation is good but cannot really express the full content of this Sanskrit text, that Shantarajasam, that it says that activity is ceased. Activity ceases means the activity is born out of the desires that has ceased. The person is otherwise quite active, but the turbulence that the desires cause, which in turn makes us go for various works, that has ceased in this person's life. And the mind then becomes calm down. The calmness can be actually seen in then every aspect of life. The behavior of that person with others changes. The approach to the success and failures changes. The expectations from different people, that changes. The calmness that is coming inside will get reflected even in the external appearance of the person. Feels so calm in the face of many very aggravated situations. This person does not lose the poise in the mind. So this is the Prashanta Manasam. And what happens to this person? Comes the highest bliss. We all seek bliss. So how to get it? Well, first let the turbulence get calmed down. This appears to be very much counter to our ordinary understanding of happiness. The ordinary understanding of happiness is that let me go to grab that nice thing and then I will be happy. If I grab that candy, then as the child feels, I will be happy. If I grab something else, I will get happy. It is the common understanding of happiness, which is actually very wrong, completely mistaken. But we still persist with these efforts sometimes lifelong, again and again, running after objects, running after all these physically attractive things or physical connections, my son, my daughter, my so many relatives, my children, my grandchildren, and the mind keeps on running towards these for pleasure. Keep on thinking about it with such pleasantness that, see, my grandchild, she is having this nice program, and how it will be. The mind just runs there for pleasure. It doesn't get pleasure, that is what is mentioned here. It just gets a titillation that is mistaken for pleasure. But this person, by calming down all desires, desires are obstructions to happiness. They are not agents of happiness. They are positive agents of suffering. But somehow and we have this stupid notion that these desires bring happiness in life. So this is what Lord is trying to tell here, that sukham uttamam, the highest happiness, real happiness that we all seek, that will come to this yogi. So whatever we are really seeking, we will be getting through this wonderful meditative or yogic practice in life. And we shall continue this discussion later. This verse has a lot more message, but today our time is finished. So, any questions? Okay, first that John, he came late, but let him ask question first.
I'm sorry. I'm not reacting for you. Actually, I came from another building where people, in AA, people talked about that turbulence too within their lives, and it's been somewhat drastically relieved. I remember there was a movie by Charlie Chaplin called The Circus. I don't know if you're, and he's on a high wire, and he's got some kind of support attached to a pulley. Well, that gets cut off somehow. And then the monkeys get loose, and they're all on his back, and he's up there balancing up on the high wire, and some of the monkeys are like covering his eyes. And what you were saying about Swami Vivekananda, reading how he gets the turbulence out of his mind, reminds me of that. It's like getting the monkey off your back, and you could think much clearer. And there's so many monkeys out there in different forms. Alcoholism, tobacco addiction, racetrack addiction. But my question is, how would you say, what advice would you give in 5 minutes, if you were just to meet somebody in 5 minutes, how to be friends? I know you spoke for an hour, I've been coming here a little while and listening to you, but what would be the main ingredients to set a person from that bottom onto the right path? How would you?
Oh, what a question, you know. That how do I set up a person and give him the best right advice in only 5 minutes? Wow. Actually, 5 minutes also are not required if the person wants it. Firstly, if the person wants, then 1 minute is enough. If the person doesn't want, then you go on pouring the advice for years and nothing enters, you say. The time is not that important. The person must be ready. How long does it take to fill a pot with water under a faucet? It depends, you know, that if you have the opening of the pot right under the faucet, you open the pot, it will get filled soon. But if you have put it upside down and you are running the faucet for all 24 hours, nothing will go in. That is what my teachers in schools used to talk about me. We are trying to teach this fellow, nothing is going inside, you see. So it is like that. The time is secondary. The constitution of the person, the readiness to receive, that is what is most important there. Yes, Charles?
There's a saying that what you resist persists, and that's what I'm afraid of. If I try to resist something, it will persist. How do I deal with that?
Well, try to resist this idea. See, these some funny ideas that what you try to resist persists, that is not completely wrong, But it doesn't mean, therefore, that then you should not resist, and all unwilling things you will keep on doing, you know. Those all wrong things you will do, because resistance is bad. Resist means I will persist in doing the same thing again. The point of emphasis is that you should not keep on brooding on the mistakes. If you do that, those mistakes, they become bigger in your awareness. It is kind of meditating on them. So, the meditation should be on the truth. And in the light of the truth, then it should be seen as wrong something. So, that wrong resistance, therefore, actually means in the positive light that concentration on the ideal. That is why Swami Vivekananda used to speak so much against this preaching of sin. That if you keep on talking about sin, then you meditate on the sin. Oh, I did this sin. Oh, I looked at that girl, a big sin. So I did that, that is a big sin. So along, by the time you are, say, through your morning, you have a list of 500 sins maybe. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make a person better. Think of God.
I noticed that when I have an unwanted thought in my mind, that seems like an ideal for the moment that I'm thinking of it, even though it's not.
Yeah, it is. It is not. So that is why this training process has to go on. That you have to remove this idea that if you do not resist, then it will be all hunky-dory. No. You have to resist all unwanted thought. But the tool to resist them is meditating on God, not meditating on them. That is. So, before I chant the concluding prayers, next Friday, there will be a Bhagavad Gita class of a different type. We have come up to halfway of 6th chapter, and we had earlier one symposium on the first 3 chapters of Bhagavad Gita by our own students, and it was a wonderful thing. So, coming Friday again, we will have a symposium like that. Participants will be our own regular students. Our Jitendra Pal, he will be telling about the 4th chapter. John Chadbourn will be discussing the 5th chapter. And Vishwanath, the half of 6th chapter. So, he couldn't come today because he is not well, but he said he will get all that read out, and then next Friday, that is a nice, very special program. So, make it a point to attend it and see how all these students, they do. Last time it was such a beautiful this presentation each of them had given. Chet was one of them, Srikanta was one of them, Teresa was one of them, Teresa and Terry both they were there. It was a beautiful exposition given by all of them. So this time also you can have that wonderful treat. So I will conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita sugita kartavya kimanyat shastra vistarehi ya swayam padmanabhasya mukhapadmadvinisrita ekam shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo